From the studios of WXXI, this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. The traditional gift for a 10th anniversary is tin, symbolizing strength and the ability to last through time, never rusting and never wearing down. It's a fitting symbol for Cordancia Chamber Orchestra, which is celebrating 10 years together, creating vibrant and inspirational concerts. Founders Pia Liptak and Kathleen Scher have brought the band to our studios today. We'll look back with them and look forward to their future as we salute a decade of musical innovation next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass, which is made possible in part by a gift from Drs. Dawn and Jack Lipson to support performance, innovation, and accessibility of the arts in the Rochester community. I'm Julia Figueres, and we welcome the founders of Cordancia right now on Backstage Pass. We have violinist Pia Liptak. Welcome, Pia.
Thank you very much.
And also, we have oboist Kathleen Scher. Congratulations on 10 years. So, Pia, how did this all start?
Well, for me, at the core of everything was repertoire. I had a long list of pieces I wanted to play that was not small chamber groups or large orchestra. And one of those pieces that we played in the very beginning, we actually played again this year to celebrate. And that was The Creation of the World by Mio, La Création du Monde, which also turned out to be the creation of us, Cordancia.
That's a great way to start. Kathleen, how did you derive the name Cordancia?
So we made up the word from corda for string and ansia for reed for the oboe, which some of our players thought was a little too literal, but we do mean to include everyone in our group and in our description. But we did named it after ourselves, basically.
And as you should, it's your orchestra, you get to do that, right? So tell me, what makes this orchestra, Pia, different from any other orchestra?
Of course, the size is smaller and we are very versatile because we can really go down to small chamber groups, but also have a chamber orchestra of the size of, well, about 40. And I have loved also playing pieces with 15, 17 players, like the Sinfonietta type. So we're very versatile. Of course, we play new music and less known music from really all periods of times. My personal favorite is the first half of the 20th century. And of course, working with contemporary composers, living composers, which this concert is all about.
One of the things that has happened over the course of the 10 years was the creation of your concerto competition, the Nico Toscano competition. We are going to actually be hearing the winner of that very shortly. Kathleen, what was the inspiration to begin this competition, and who gets to compete?
So this is open to essentially high school and college students in Monroe County. We tend to get a lot of Eastman students, as you might imagine, and quite a few. This year, unfortunately, we did not have any high school applicants, which is why we have just one winner this year. But normally we choose a high school level winner and a college level winner, and they both get to perform with us. The concerto competition started, we've done four now, and it started we had the idea of doing it before we actually had a sponsor. And Pia, maybe you could talk about.
Yes. The Toscano family, it's inspired by the son of the Toscano family, who Nico Toscano, who lived a very short life because of a long-term illness. And they wanted to support our efforts to celebrate our connection, community, and how music can heal.
What have you done to promote this? How do you go about sending out the word that you have this competition going? That must be a little daunting.
Yes, it is. We try to get the word out to all the high school music directors, orchestra and band directors,
HYSO, Hochstein's Youth Orchestra, the RPYO.
To Eastman professors, Eastman faculty, posters, emails, Facebook.
So what's the prize? When someone wins, what do they get?
They get the opportunity to perform with us for one or two concerts, and they also get a prize of $200.
Very nice. Very nice indeed. So let us hear your winner this year. Your winner this year is Michael Huerta, and he plays the flute. And today on Backstage Pass, we'll hear him play the first movement of Lowell Lieberman's Flute Concerto. It is... We have, again, Michael Huerta playing the flute, Rachel Lauber conducts, and this is Cordantia Chamber Orchestra on Backstage Pass. Thank you. That was the first movement of Lowell Lieberman's Flute Concerto. We heard Cordencia Chamber Orchestra under the baton of Rachel Lauber. And the soloist, Michael Huerta, is the winner of the Nico Toscano Concerto Competition. And congratulations on all of that, Michael. And thank you for joining us today on Backstage Pass.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's see. Men playing flutes are relatively common in Europe. In the U.S., not so much. So what inspired you to pick up that instrument?
It was actually one of the only instruments I could make a sound on when I tried out all of them, which was, in fact, because I'm from Texas, so when they try you out on every instrument, flute's actually the one that most people can't make a sound on. But I used to always play like Coke bottles when I was little, so I was very used to like doing stuff like this, and so it just kind of naturally happened, and so that's how I chose it.
Born to play the flute, plus it's really portable.
Yeah, oh, it's very, very convenient.
Yeah, very convenient. Put it in the backpack and go. So how did, and where in Texas did you grow up?
Originally from Austin, Texas.
So how did a guy from Austin, Texas find the Eastman School of Music?
My high school was very marching band heavy because that's how just kind of how Texas is. So big marching band. But my high school had a wind ensemble in it. And it was a very small group of people, and my band director wanted it to be like that because of the Eastman Wind Ensemble. She actually decided to create an ensemble at her school that was one on a part, just like the Eastman Wind Ensemble here plays. And that's something that is widely known around the country and the world from Eastman is the Wind Ensemble. So that's actually the first time I heard about this school. And so when I was looking for music schools, I was like, I might just try. So I did, and I got in.
You sure did.
Yeah.
Did you do the marching band thing?
Yes, I did. I was actually a member of the marching band for all 4 years of high school. And then the last 2 years, I was a drum major. So I conducted the band.
Oh, well, that's fun, too.
Yeah. It was.
Did you miss it? Did you like it?
I loved it. It was fantastic. However, I really enjoy to play my instrument sitting down. not necessarily sitting down, but just like in one space. I don't really like to move and play, like, but yeah.
So how many classical musicians are in your family, Michael?
Zero.
Zero?
Zero, yes.
What did they think about you? You're kind of a different beast then for them.
Yeah, my family has always been into the arts in general. So my mom is a middle school theater teacher. My older sister goes to grad school for theater directing in London. So we're very arts heavy. And my parents have always been super supportive of everything. And they always come to everything. They're coming to our concert later this week. So yeah, it's been a fantastic journey to where I am.
So what did you think when you got from Texas, where it's warm, to Rochester, where the rumor is we have winter? This must have been a bit of a change for you.
Oh, it was so cold. I'm still cold. Every day when I wake up, I'm still like, oh, it's too cold. I think the transition was actually pretty easy. I don't need much as a person, and I think I tend to adapt to my surroundings pretty well. So, and there's such a rich community here of music and of arts, and that's what I love about Rochester, honestly, is how big the art community is here.
So what's next for you?
Hopefully grad school, and then after that, hopefully I'll be playing in an orchestra. That is the goal. I want to be a flutist in a flute section in a major orchestra.
We will be listening for you, Michael. Congratulations again. Flutist Michael Huerta, who is the Nico Toscano Concerto Competition winner for Cordencia Chamber Orchestra. Back to music we go. We go metallic with two movements of Smoke and Steel by Thomas Osborne. Conductor is Rachel Lauber, and you are listening to WXXI's Backstage Pass. Thank you. Smoke and Steel, written by Thomas Osborne. The first time that we have ever had break drums played on Backstage Pass, Rafer Lover was conducting the Cordancia Chamber Orchestra. Joining me now is a violinist. Her name is Alexis Vogt. And Alexis, welcome.
Thank you.
You have a not-so-secret other life. You are the chair of the optics department at MCC. You have a PhD in optics, 3 patents. You've had more than 30 articles, 13 countries, many, many presentations. Were you always into optics?
I became into optics when I joined the University of Rochester as a freshman. That's how I became interested. So I've been a violinist since I was 5. When I was looking at colleges, I knew I wanted to continue with violin as part of my life, but not make it a major. But that's what attracted me to the University of Rochester, was I could go there as an undergrad, but then I could also take lessons at the Eastman School of Music, which is what I did. And I found out about optics when I was a freshman there, and then I ended up staying for my PhD as well.
Where did you grow up?
I'm originally from North Carolina, but my family is in Buffalo, so I went to high school in Buffalo.
So you're just around the corner from here.
That's right.
This is one of the joys, I think, of having a great liberal arts school like the University of Rochester, the doors that are open for people. You can walk in without much of a plan and walk out with a PhD in optics.
Yes, absolutely.
So optics is kind of a male field, which makes you a rarity. You, however, work in Cordancia, which is heavily female, so this is a change of pace for you.
Very much so. Yes, it is. It's been wonderful. And in fact, I've known Pia and Kathleen since I came to the University of Rochester as a freshman and many years ago. And we played together in various different orchestras. And so when they mentioned 10 years ago that they were going to start this orchestra, I was thrilled to be a part of it because it's such a wonderful balance for me. Very different, as you point out, from my day-to-day activities, but a wonderful way to still be able to be a musician without having it be my predominant career that I'm pursuing.
So let's talk about the career you're pursuing, because it is heavily male. How are we going to get women into science, girls interested in science? Yes. I mean, they must be, right?
Absolutely. This is in fact a passion of mine, is to do just that, to change the notion that there are so many more men in science than there are women and girls. And I think it starts at a very young age. I do a lot of outreach in even the elementary schools, my children's preschools, to talk about optics demonstrations, and specifically to talk about the fact that women and girls can pursue math and pursue science. And I hope that I'm viewed as a role model, so that my own students at MCC will see me, and then other high school students will come and join our optics program. It turns out that MCC is the only community college in the entire country that has a program in precision optics. And our students are sought after not only around the United States, but around the entire world. So there is a huge opportunity for students, and particularly women, to join this tremendous field that's responsible for things like our smartphones and our backup cameras and our smart televisions and the way that we live today. It's all being driven by optics. We just need more people in the field.
There's another problem, too, and that's the lack of music in the schools. There needs to be a balance, yes?
Yes. Oh, very much so. In fact, many of the optics companies have counted the number of bands that they have within their own optics programs, because there are so many people who are interested in both music as well as the sciences, which is why my fellow musicians here are so vital to the future of our own students and our own children's lives, is that so many of them are teaching as music educators in the schools, and that's desperately what we need to continue.
Alexis Vogt, I thank you for bringing your life of science and music to us on Backstage
Pass.
Thank
you. We're all thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Cordantia Chamber Orchestra joins us on Backstage Pass, and we're back into music now with a graduate of the Eastman School of Music, Aristea Mellos, and her piece, Fountain of Steel.
Thank you.
That work is called Fountain of Steel. It's written by Aristea Mellis, who lives in Australia. We heard Cordencia Chamber Orchestra with conductor Rachel Lauber, and Ines Druskovich was the featured pianist. I'm Julia Figueres, and this is Deborah Uman, who is a trumpeter with Cordencia. Deborah, you really... You also have a not-so-secret other life. You are the chair of the English department at St. John Fisher College.
Yes, I am.
Oh, you were the one who scared me when I was in college, weren't you?
Apparently so.
That's right. So, Deborah, you really pursued trumpet vigorously when you were growing up.
Yes, I did.
You were at Booty, the Boston University Tanglewood Institute.
Correct.
Juilliard, pre-college. And went to Yale, went to University of Colorado, kept playing your trumpet. When was that moment when you said, trumpet is the second thing, English is the first?
It was in college. I was considering pursuing a professional musical career. And I realized that I like to do too many things. And I think to be a professional musician, you have to be laser focused on that. And I knew I wanted to continue my music because it is my deepest love, but that I also wanted to pursue literature and look at politics and be involved in the community. And I thought I couldn't be a musician at the level I would want to be as a professional and maintain all of my other interests.
So how did a girl get a trumpet?
I actually got my first trumpet was a bugle, and I was about 6 years old, and it's a pretty good story. So I spent all my summers since I was 4 months old at down the lake from Tanglewood, where the Boston Symphony rehearses. And our neighbor was Roger Voisin, who was the principal trumpet player of the Boston Symphony. And he was our friend. And I would go over there for a while and pick cucumbers. And I always liked to listen to him play. And so when I was 5, he showed me how to buzz his mouthpiece. And I raced home and I went to the mirror and I buzzed that mouthpiece and I got some sounds out of it. And that winter, he sent me a bugle because I was too little to hold up a whole trumpet. And so I played that bugle, which I still have. And when it came time to choose an instrument, there was never any doubt but it would be the trumpet.
So has brass carried on in your family?
It is. I know Maren Alsop said that when she was born, her parents were hoping for a piano trio. I was trying for a brass quintet. I haven't gotten it all the way. My oldest plays the French horn. My middle plays the trombone. Our youngest is interested in percussion, so we'll just have to let it go.
I don't know. I think that a brass trio with percussion sounds pretty enchanting to me.
I think we'll make it work.
When you talk about being an English professor, why is English as a major important? This is a discussion that has become very current recently.
It is an incredibly important conversation, one that has been defining my career to my surprise. I think when I studied English, it was a huge major. Everyone realized that works of literature are worth studying and that we want to be able to communicate both in speech and in writing. And recently, for many reasons, it has been seen as a luxury, as something that you do if you are a dilettante. And I can't imagine anything further from the truth. Literature tells our stories. It's what reminds us of what makes us human. Being able to communicate is one of the most important job skills there is. And I tell my majors now that they, with this degree, can do anything and everything.
You know, this is a question that comes up with classical music as well. Why is it important? Why is it current to us? It's just old people's music. Well, maybe not today, the music we're hearing on Backstage Pass, but this question comes up a lot.
Yes.
Why is old important?
I think old is important partly because of tradition, partly because it's beautiful, and partly because it's strange and different. So we go to a liberal arts college to learn about things that are not just about ourselves. We don't just look at our own belly buttons. And so when we read old literature, and I teach Shakespeare, so that's fairly old, it's like learning a new language. And this is an incredible skill, and we want to be able to have empathy with those who are different from ourselves. And sometimes that means people who live 400 years ago.
Thank you so much for sitting down and talking with us. It was a real pleasure meeting you. Deborah Uman, trumpeter with Cordantia.
Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. We're going to go back to music now with Cordantia Chamber Orchestra. And we're going to go a little off the beaten path at this point as we listen to the first movement of P.D.Q. Bach and his Eine kleine Nichtmusik. This is Backstage Pass. Kind of name that tune-ish. Eine kleine Nichtmusik, the very first movement. Peter Shipley, P.D.Q. Bach. Cordantia, the Chamber Orchestra, performed and conducting is Rachel Lauber. I'm Julia Figueres, and this is Backstage Pass as we are celebrating Cordancia Chamber Orchestra on this, their 10th anniversary. And joining me for one last time are the founders of Cordancia Chamber Orchestra, Pia Liptak and Kathleen Scher. So these are wonderful players. Where do they come from, Pia?
Yeah, we have players from many different places and areas. We have professional musicians, and we have music teachers and educators. We have people who, as we just heard, who have their work in a different field than music. We have students, Eastman students, sometimes college, high school students. So great variety.
And they're wonderful players. They really sound great. You know, I listen to your group, and I just think, Kathleen, you've put together such a unique sound, and you have a unique mission as well. What is your vision as you put together your seasons and your concerts?
We are trying to play some pieces that you haven't heard before. There's so much music out there, and we're trying to find some different things. We're enjoying playing them, too. I think all of our players are thoroughly enjoying getting to play new repertoire. So that's a huge thing for us. This concert obviously features living composers. So everyone on this program is alive.
Well, it's questionable about Petey Cubach. And do you commission at all, Pia?
Yes, we would love to do more of that.
I actually commissioned a piece from Pia's husband, David, in memory of my mother, who passed away a few years ago. He did an amazing job of a piece that we have played twice now with soprano and chamber orchestra.
So what is in your to-do list? You have one decade down and you're moving into your second one. What is your biggest to-do thing?
I think we will continue also collaborating with other organizations, dance companies. Next year we will have three ballets. With Biodance, that would be in the spring of 2022,
I think.
But I think sustaining our mission of putting programs together that where the repertoire illuminated each other, we could sometimes put together music that are more well known with pieces that are lesser known, and that sometimes gives us very dynamic programs, I think.
You brought a lot of that dynamism to us today on Backstage Pass, and we thank you both and congratulate you on 10 good years. I'm Julia Figueres. Our executive producer is Gene Fisher. Our audience technician is Andrew Croucher, with help from Vikram Gupta. Our floor manager is Lindsay Brown. Backstage Pass is made possible in part by a gift from Drs. Dawn and Jack Lipson to support performance, innovation, and accessibility of the arts in the Rochester community. Many people made this happen. Our facilities manager, Ruth Watson, and her crew, the wonderful people in membership, and of course, thank you to the wonderful friends of WXXI and Cordancia, who joined us today. I'm your producer and host, Julia Figueres, with, of course, our thanks to all. Backstage Pass is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.
This is Classical 91.5 and 90.3.